You are now listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Burnaby, BC.
Dubai, here in the United Arab Emirates. This is Democracy Now!
The kids can't sleep, the kids can't eat, the kids can't even speak. Most of the time they're just mute, silent, shaking out of fear, sometimes whimpering because of how close the bombs are wherever you are in Gaza. And again, how the houses shake every time there is a bomb around. And this is happening again all over Gaza Strip.
Those were the words of the Palestinian poet and professor Rafat Al-Arir on Democracy Now! Just 2 months ago. He was killed this week in an Israeli airstrike, along with his brother, sister, and four of his nieces. We'll speak to one of Rafat's close friends as the Palestinian death toll in Gaza tops 17,000. Then, in an exclusive interview, we speak with the indigenous climate activist Jacob Johns, shot 2 months ago in New Mexico by a gunman wearing a red MAGA hat. Jacob is here at the UN Climate Summit.
I was shot in New Mexico while attending a prayer vigil for a conquistador that was trying to be put up for a statue. It was like a homage to colonization.
Then Brazilian President Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva is calling for phasing out fossil fuels, but has alarmed many climate activists as Brazil moves to join the oil producer alliance OPEC Plus as an observer state.
Now is the time to face the debate about the slow motion pace of the decarbonization of the planet and to work towards an economy that will be less reliant on fossil fuel.
Speak to Amazon Watch about Lula's climate record. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. We're broadcasting from the UN Climate Summit in Dubai. The UN Agency for Palestinian Refugees warns civil order is breaking down in the Gaza Strip as Israel continues its unrelenting assault. In one of the latest attacks, dozens of Palestinians were killed and injured. Israeli warplanes struck near the Al Amal Hospital and the Palestinian Red Crescent headquarters in Khan Yunis. In Gaza City, Doctors Without Borders reports 115 Palestinians were brought to the Al-Aqsa Hospital Thursday dead on arrival. The medical charity said in a statement, quote, "The hospital is full. The morgue is full. We call on Israeli forces to stop the indiscriminate bombing of the Gaza Strip and protect civilians and civilian infrastructure. We need a ceasefire now," they said. Meanwhile, videos emerged showing Israeli soldiers in Beit Lahia in northern Gaza detaining over 100 Palestinian men at gunpoint, forcing them to strip to their underwear while lined up, kneeling on the pavement. Among those detained was Dia al-Haqlut, a Palestinian journalist with the London-based pan-Arab newspaper Al-Arabi Al-Jadid. In a statement, the newspaper condemned the mistreatment of al-Jadid and other civilians, saying Israeli forces, quote, "deliberately subjected the Gazans to degrading treatment, forcing them to disrobe, conducting intrusive searches, and subjecting them to humiliation upon arrest before forcibly transporting them to undisclosed locations," unquote. In the occupied West Bank, the Palestinian Health Ministry reports at least six Palestinians were killed and many others wounded in Israeli raids overnight. An Israeli airstrike in Gaza has killed the prominent Palestinian academic and activist Rafat Al-Arir, along with his brother, his sister, and four of her daughters. He authored dozens of stories and poems about life under Israeli occupation. Rafat Alaria spoke to Democracy Now! In October. Israeli strikes rattled his family's home in Gaza City.
Speak about thousands, hundreds and thousands of Israeli bombs and shells targeting all areas of the Gaza Strip. The kids can't sleep. The kids can't eat. The kids can't even speak. Most of the time, they're just mute, silent, shaking out of fear, sometimes whimpering because of how close the bombs are wherever you are in Gaza.
We'll hear more of our interview with Rafat Alarir after headlines and speak with Jihad Abu Salim, executive director of the Jerusalem Fund, former student of Rafat Alarir, whom Abu Salim described as a teacher, a mentor, and a friend. An anti-tank missile fired by Hezbollah fighters in Lebanon killed an Israeli civilian on Thursday. The cross-border attack prompted retaliatory fire from Israeli tanks and helicopter gunships. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu threatened to reduce Lebanon's capital, Beirut, to rubble if Hezbollah increases its attacks.
If Hezbollah chooses to start an all-out war, then it will, by its own hands, turn Beirut and southern Lebanon, not far from here, into Gaza and Khan Yunis.
In Tel Aviv, friends and family of Israelis held hostage by Hamas held a candlelighting ceremony Thursday marking the start of the Jewish holiday of Hanukkah. This is Daniel Lifshitz, whose 83-year-old grandfather, Oded, was kidnapped by Hamas and brought to the Gaza Strip October 7th.
We light the candles for the return of the hostages, for the release of the hostages, to make a deal for the hostages, and that's what we are here for.
On Tuesday, released Israeli hostages joined the loved ones of Israelis still held captive in a meeting with Netanyahu and his war cabinet. Haaretz reports one woman whose release was negotiated during an exchange of captives assailed Israeli leaders for indiscriminate attacks that put hostages at risk. She said, quote, "We slept in tunnels. We feared not Hamas, but Israel might kill us. And then it would have been said, Hamas killed you," unquote. Another former hostage whose husband remains a captive cited recent reports in the Wall Street Journal that Israel's drawn up plans to flood Gaza's network of underground tunnels with seawater, a move that could foul Gaza's supply of drinking water for decades. She said, quote, "He was taken to the tunnels, and you talk about washing the tunnels with seawater. You prioritize politics over the hostages," she said. The United States military has launched joint flight drills with Guyana as the White House reaffirmed its unwavering support of Guyanese sovereignty amid mounting tensions with Venezuela over the disputed oil-rich Essequibo region. After holding a referendum on the issue last weekend, the Venezuelan government ordered its state-owned companies to start exploring oil and mineral reserves in Essequibo, which represents roughly two-thirds of Guyana's territory. Guyanese asked the International Court of Justice to reaffirm current borders. This is the Guyanese president, Irfan Ali.
"We will not allow our territory to be violated, nor the development of our country to be stymied by this desperate threat."
Brazilian President Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva said Thursday regional groups should help find a peaceful resolution, adding, quote, "We do not need war in South America," Lula said. In Texas, a judge granted a temporary restraining order Thursday against the state's sweeping abortion ban to allow a 20-week pregnant woman with a non-viable fetus to get an abortion. 31-year-old Kate Cox filed the first-of-its-kind lawsuit last week. Travis County Judge Maya Guerra Campbell said it was, quote, "unforgivable that she was forced to go to court," unquote, to seek emergency medical care.
The idea that Ms. Cox wants desperately to be a parent and this law might actually cause her to lose that ability is shocking and would be a genuine miscarriage of justice.
Following the judge's ruling, Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton threatened to prosecute any providers involved in Kate Cox's abortion care. A Nevada grand jury has indicted six fake Trump electors who falsely claimed Trump won the 2020 vote in Nevada. They face felony charges with penalties that could see them sentenced to up to 5 years in prison. In Wisconsin, 10 pro-Trump Republicans involved in their state's fake elector scheme admitted Biden won Wisconsin in 2020 as part of a legal settlement. The agreement compels the 10 fake electors to cooperate with the Justice Department's investigations into Trump's election fraud and the January 6th Capitol insurrection. The Justice Department indicted Hunter Biden Thursday on 9 counts of tax evasion. The indictment filed in California accuses President Biden's son of withholding at least $1.4 million in federal taxes owed from 2016 through 2019, including income from foreign businesses in Ukraine and China. This comes as Hunter Biden is already facing federal firearms charges in Delaware. And Benjamin Zephaniah, a British activist and poet whose works were inspired by his Jamaican and Barbadian roots, has died at the age of 65. Zephaniah published his first collection of reggae-inspired dub poetry after he moved to London in 1979, tackling topics like racism and poverty. He was also one of the first poets to address the climate crisis. In 2003, Benjamin Zephaniah refused the prestigious OBE Award, which stands for Order of the British Empire. In an op-ed, he wrote, quote, "No way, Mr. Blair, no way, Mrs. Queen. I'm profoundly anti-empire," he said. In 2010, Zephaniah spoke to Democracy Now! Just after he joined the British production of The People Speak, a people's history of Britain inspired by the work of the late historian Howard Zinn.
I didn't know big words like democracy. I didn't know the difference between left or right or anything like that. I just knew I was suffering racism. I was suffering police brutality. Our schools are run down, our houses are run down, and I wanted to speak about it. It was political, but I couldn't spell the word politics. I just wanted to talk about the conditions we lived in.
And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. We're broadcasting from Dubai in the United Arab Emirates at the UN Climate Summit. Israel's bombardment of Gaza has entered its third month. Health officials in Gaza say the Israeli assault has killed over 17,000 Palestinians. Earlier this week, an Israeli airstrike in Gaza City killed the acclaimed Palestinian academic and activist Rafat Al-Arir, along with his brother, his sister, and four of his nieces. For more than 16 years, Al-Arir worked as a professor of English literature at the Islamic University of Gaza, where he taught Shakespeare and other subjects. Rafat Al-Arir was a father of six and a mentor to many young Palestinian writers and journalists. He also co-founded the organization We Are Not Numbers. He authored dozens of stories and poems about life under Israeli occupation in Gaza. In a few minutes, we'll speak to one of his friends. But first, I want to return to Rafat Al-Arir in his own words. He's spoken to us several times. This is October 10th. As he spoke to Democracy Now!, Israeli strikes rattled his family's home in Gaza City.
What is happening in Gaza is complete and utter extermination of the non-Jewish population in occupied Palestine. As you mentioned, Israel ordered a medieval hermetic siege from air and sea. Israel has also just bombed the only way out through Egypt, the Rafah crossing. The only way out is What we are foreseeing is slow starvation, slow genocide. Maybe Israel is going to push us all into the sea. And I think what is making it even more difficult than before is that the whole world, not even lip service, all American and European countries and politicians are rushing to pledge allegiance to Israel and to Netanyahu. American presidential hopefuls are literally calling for genocide. American mainstream media is not pushing back against Israeli officials, calling for the collateral damage of hundreds of thousands of Palestinians in Gaza. Why is this happening? Because we refuse to live under occupation. We refuse to live in total submission. We want freedom. We want this occupation to end. This is not a state of war, as one of your guests just mentioned. This is a state of occupation that started over 75 years, that started with the British Empire giving Palestine to the Zionist movement in 1917. The only hope we have is in the growing popular support in America, in the movements the human rights and the rights movements in America and across Europe to take to the streets to pressure their politicians into putting an end to this dark episode of not only the history of the Middle East but also the history of humanity. If people are asking how was the Holocaust allowed and other genocides in Africa and across the world, now you can see this live on TV, live on social media. Palestinians, whole blocks destroyed, hospitals, schools, businesses. We are speaking about thousands and thousands of housing units destroyed by Israel. So my message to the free people of the world is to move, to pressure, to mobilize, and to take to the streets.
Rafat Aladir, you are the father of six. How old are your children? And can you describe what it's like to live there right now?
Like I said, this has been systematically happening for over seven decades. It was the noose around Gaza's neck was tightened 15 years ago, and it's being tightened even further now. The situation is unspeakable. You can't describe what's happening in words. We speak about thousands, hundreds and thousands of Israeli bombs and shells targeting all areas of the Gaza Strip. The kids can't sleep. The kids can't eat. The kids can't even speak. Most of the time, they're just mute, silent, shaking out of fear, sometimes whimpering because of how close the bombs are wherever you are in Gaza. And again, how the houses shake every time there is a bomb around. And this is happening again all over Gaza Strip. Israel is telling people, is pushing people forcibly to leave out of their homes and asking, urging them to go to certain places like the city center or the UN places, shelters. And then Israel bombs the roads leading to these areas and bombs these crowded areas. Yesterday, there was a massacre. Israel killed about 60 Palestinians in Jabalia refugee camp in a local market where there is a UN school, people taking shelter there. So whether it is my kids or any Palestinian kid or any Palestinian, no one is safe. No place is safe. Israel is bombing everywhere.
Those were the words of the acclaimed Palestinian academic and activist Rafat Aladir, speaking on Democracy Now! October 10th. Earlier this week, he was killed in an Israeli airstrike, along with his brother, his sister, and four of his nieces. Rafat last posted on social media Monday, writing on the platform X, quote, "The Democratic Party and Biden are responsible for the Gaza genocide perpetrated by Israel." When Democracy Now! Spoke to Rafat during the 2021 Israeli assault on Gaza, he also accused the Biden administration of enabling the massacre of Palestinians.
I think it was Biden that gave Netanyahu the green light to start this. When they tweeted that America supports Israel's right to defend itself, 2 days after the aggression started, I quickly said that this is going to be a long war against civilians because Israel is killing us using American weapons, using American technology, using American planes. America has, the American administration, all American administrations have blood, Palestinian blood, on their hands. The massacre that is going on is on Biden.
Again, the words of the late Palestinian academic and activist Rafat Al-Adid, speaking on Democracy Now! In 2021, months after he had written an op-ed for the New York Times headlined, "My child asks, can Israel destroy our building if the power is out?" We're joined right now by Jihad Absalim, scholar and policy analyst from Gaza, executive director of the Jerusalem Fund. He was a student and close friend of Rafat Al-Adid. Jihad, thank you so much for joining us. Our deepest condolences on the loss of your friend, who you've known for some 17, 18 years. Can you talk about how you learned of Rafat's death and tell us the story of his life?
Thank you for having me. I was at work when my wife called me, asking me if I heard something about Rafat and if the news about him were true. I opened my phone, I looked at my social media apps, and that was the moment I realized that he was gone. Rifat Al-Arair was a towering figure in Palestinian society, especially in Gaza. He transcended the role of a mere educator and a teacher. He was a mentor, a beacon of wisdom and guidance, a loving father and husband, and a compassionate son. Rifat's presence enriched the lives of hundreds, if not thousands, of students. His influence extended far beyond the confines of the classroom. Rifat wasn't just a teacher. He was a friend, a confidant. He was someone who loved to support his students and who believed strongly in the potential of each student, offering them personal advice and guidance. Rifat will be missed. It is really hard to sum up Rifat's story in a few words. But one thing I can say, Amy, is that Rifat's life was not without its share of many, many challenges. Despite personal tragedies and the harsh realities of life in Gaza, Rifat remained unwavering, using his pen and his voice to fight back and to write back. His resilience was an inspiration to us all, his students and friends and members of the cultural, intellectual, and literary community in Gaza. In a place like Gaza, where educational resources are scarce, Rifat's mastery of the English language was more than a skill, it was a mission. He saw English as a key, a tool to liberation, and a means to defy the siege and intellectual and academic restrictions that Israel imposed on Gaza and other Palestinian communities. So for him, his teaching wasn't just about imparting knowledge or conducting exams. It was about empowerment, about using language as a weapon against oppression.
Do you know, Jihad, how he was killed?
From what we hear in the media and based on reports by his friends, neighbors. He was sheltering at a school, and he received a phone call from the Israeli intelligence informing him that his location, that they located his place, that they identified his location. And whether this was a call from an official arm of the Israeli intelligence or a mere troll, we don't know. He decided that it's probably not safe for him to remain at the school where he was sheltering. So he went probably to see family, his sister, his brother, and at that moment, the place where he was bombed, which led to killing him, his sister, his brother, and his four nieces. Many of the details remain unknown, given the fact that the part of Gaza where he was killed in Shija'iyya is cut off from the rest of the Gaza Strip. It is under heavy bombardment, and it is the site of many atrocities that are still being committed by Israeli forces. So without having journalists and investigators and workers with international organizations access these areas, we can't really fully grasp all the details of Rafat's death and, of course, the tragedies that have befell many, many other Palestinians there.
Jihad Abu Salim, he taught at Islamic University, is that right? Before the well-known human rights attorney, Raji Sarani, ultimately left Gaza, we were interviewing him at his home in Gaza City, the house shook, and we learned then that Islamic University had been hit. Now, in the last days, we've learned that the president of Islamic University was killed with his family, Professor Sufyan Taya. That occurred just recently. He was a well-known mathematician and physicist. Did you know him?
I did not know Professor Taya. But as someone who went to both the Al-Azhar University in Gaza, which was destroyed, the Islamic University in Gaza, which was destroyed, I can tell you that the scale of loss, the tragedy that has befallen the academic, scholarly, and intellectual community in Gaza and in Palestine is unprecedented. Israel is destroying the foundations of society in the Gaza Strip. Israel is systematically destroying our educational system, our cultural institutions, and today we saw footage of the Grand Omari Mosque in Gaza, a structure that dates back to thousands of years, also in ruins. This is a genocidal war of erasure, of uprooting, and of mass destruction. We mourn our teachers, our educators, our doctors, our nurses, our friends, our neighbors, and we also are mourning the loss of a society as we knew it that no longer exists. And this is all happening while the world is watching, leaving Palestinians in Gaza endure one of the largest bombardment campaigns in the 21st century. How is this acceptable? How is this allowed to happen?
Jihad Absalom, Rafat edited two volumes. Can you talk about those books, like Gaza Writes Back? He was a poet, a writer, an author, an activist.